Hello, and welcome to Season 5 of Human Awareness, the official podcast for High Global, where we take you on a journey through love, intimacy, and sexuality. I'm your host, Haya, and I'm inviting our guests to open their hearts and their experience so we can all learn together. Okay, with that out of the way, let's roll tape on our interview.
Hello, and welcome back to Human Awareness. I am so excited to introduce you to our guest today. My dear guest, what is your name, what pronouns do you use, and where in the world are you?
My name is Jacqueline Bothoris. My pronouns are she and her, and I'm currently in Mendocino County, California.
Wonderful. I'm just in Oakland. You're just up the road. I was introduced to you, and we had a conversation that really kind of inspired me, and It's just so exciting to have you on the podcast today. As an organization, like High does a lot of work around intimacy, sexuality, and like love, kind of the yummy part of being alive. And there is an important part about being alive that we seem to skim over a lot. And that seems to be your expertise. What is that?
I don't know if I would call it my expertise, but it's a deep area of interest for me. And that is death. And to me, that really looks like honoring the full cycle of life. And that's the part that I think that we've been missing, is the honoring of death.
Yeah. What does that look like to you?
Well, to me, in many cultures, the side of death that we're afraid of is the same side of the feminine that we're afraid of. And so for me, this journey has really looked a lot like reincorporating the feminine, the dark, the mystery, the underworld, the fertile void, and what is beyond the veil. And inherently, that happens to be very closely linked with death as well. And so it's really been a very earth-based inquiry for me, and a lot of studying and practices around what does it mean to honor the full cycle of life? And that includes the death, the dark, the feminine, the underworld.
When you say cycle, what am I imagining there?
For me, personally, I don't think that death is the end. I think death is an initiation, and there's more on the other side of it. And I think that when we've, in the West, many of us have simplified the human existence to this here and now, I think we've kind of missed something bigger in the picture. And there is less mystery. There's less possibility for what happens after this life. And in that, I think we kind of miss the next cycle, miss the next adventure, miss the next whatever comes after this. And so to me, it feels very much like death isn't the end. It's a new beginning as well. And I see that fine line, and it's one tick before and one tick after, but right in the middle there, you know, this veil of death is like this before and after. And I believe that there is an after.
I'm just sitting with how that at the same time feels really at home and right to me. And at the same, it feels incredibly alien. When seen against the backdrop of the dominant cultural conversation around death, you know, it's such a universal experience that, you know, as far as we know, everybody experiences. And it is like, is there a taboo? Is there fear? Like, why are we not talking about this?
I believe it's fear. I mean, just look at the world right now. We're in such a time of upheaval, and there's so much uncertainty. I feel like we're very much on unstable ground, and we have been for a long time. But I think the trick is we haven't been willing to accept or embrace that, and instead we're trying to control it. And I think that we try and control things by pushing them away or containing them in some way. And I believe that part of why we're afraid of death is because it means that there's something bigger than us, that we can't control this, and that there's something that we're at the mercy of that is beyond us. And so I think death, I think we try and control life and really keep death away for that reason. And it's a missed opportunity, in my opinion.
A missed opportunity to what?
to really live more fully. Yeah. You know, there were all these ancient cultures that really revered death. And I think it was both in service to death and this rite of passage and this initiation, but also in service to living more fully, to understanding that we're here for a blink of an eye, a moment in time, and to really allow ourselves to live fully while we're here. This has been my own relationship with death, that I feel like I'm in this spot where the closer I get to it, or the more I taste it or touch it in different aspects of my life, the more grateful I am to be here. You know, everything is more precious. It's richer. It's more vibrant. It's sweeter. It's more meaningful. And it's been a really interesting journey for me, I'd say over the last, probably 20 years, not having conscious awareness of this, but really inching my way closer to letting this presence, this being of death, or this concept of it, not pushing it as far away as I used to, and like letting it sit down on the bench next to me. Mm-hmm. And there is such wisdom in it. This doesn't happen all the time, but when I can view it as a friend, an ally, a teacher, I find that I live a fuller, richer life.
Is there something about that that serves as a reminder of the ephemeral nature of life? Or is there something, or is that the wrong kind of dichotomy to bring up?
I like to think of it that way. You know, I think it depends to me if I'm zooming in to the microcosm or I'm like way, way, way out in the macro. But if I zoom in, everything seems sweet and precious in this moment because mm-hmm. there's only this one. Mm-hmm. And if I zoom way, way out, it's like, God, this is going to be like this forever, potentially. You know, I could keep having these experiences in this life, in other lifetimes, beyond life. And so there is this inherent sweetness to me about living in such a 3D, like, dense world and having such polarity here on this planet between life and death in a way where I think beyond this life isn't quite as that ephemeral nature is more present.
And it is more precious because you know it will end. Is that the
strand
I'm picking up?
Yeah.
I mean, I have that relationship with a lot of things. Like a fresh bouquet of flowers is per definition more beautiful than even the most exquisite silk flowers. Because you know that they are on your table. They are actively in the process of dying.
Yeah.
Right? And I think there's something like the beautiful vibrancy of it that is right there won't be there a week from now.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting. My mom always found it incredibly sad. She's like, don't pick flowers. It's sad when they die. Like, I hear you. But also, during the pandemic, I ended up mostly ordering all my groceries online. I was like, if I don't have to go into the supermarket, I don't have to. But I got into a habit of ordering myself fresh flowers every week. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a beautiful, like, oh yeah, this is something that exists, that gets to be there.
Yeah.
I have a tattoo that says all tattoos are temporary. Occasionally I have people asking questions like, is it really a temporary tattoo? I was like, yeah, it looks real. It's like, and then when somebody goes, what, like, how does it work? Like, how is it temporary? It's like, well, the canvas is temporary. And I liked playing with that theme because, you know, in tattoo, like, death is a very common, like, skulls and roses and what have you are a very common theme. To be a little bit more literal about it, assuming that a body is permanent has never occurred to me. What brought you to this work? Where did the curiosity come from?
Yeah. Well, part of me wants to say nature. You know, I've been just exploring nature a lot. And like, even today I went for this walk around the neighborhood and it's autumn here and the leaves are so beautiful, changing colors on the trees and falling off onto the ground and crunching under my feet. And there's this one tree out in the front of our house that I've lovingly named Priscilla. And she's taught me so much about life and death and the cycles and how she's like just letting go, you know. And this summer, my partner and I had a garden. It was the first time I've really gardened before. Mm. And God, I learned so much from there too. And I'm just, I think part of my interest in this work was coming from a very business background and feeling very divorced from the natural world. Mm-hmm. And just slowly, I'm just inching my way back to what is happening in the world around me and in life around me and in nature. And there is such wisdom, like to watch this tree, Priscilla, shed her leaves and not hold on to them. Like she's willing to let go into death, into being bare and cold and wet in the winter here. And to see her like just, you know, life just moves back through her in the spring and she buds again. And then she flowers and blooms and all the leaves grow back. And it's just, there's something that I think we're missing in the Western world, in our society around, you know, we're running and chasing and like all the time trying to figure out something that is right here. It's like, mm-hmm. it's around us, you know? And I feel like we're afraid of death and we push things away and we're like, trying to control everything in our environment. When really, if we stepped back a little bit, I'm like watching these trees shed their leaves and like, no, that it grows back next spring. There is life after death here. And God, I plant these seeds in the garden and they grow these gorgeous vegetables for us more than we can eat. And there's abundance, you know? And I think mm-hmm. in many ways we've forgotten this sense of safety that we have in both the earth and a more eternal position of things. But, you know, it's been these experiences, I think, in the subtle ways that have really drawn me to understanding, like, what are we missing in the West and how can we incorporate more of that? And so a big part of what I'm interested in with my work lately is really around how do we honor death in business cycles and like, how do we bring that back in as a part of the life cycle and trust that like not everything is supposed to grow up and to the right forever. That's just mm-hmm. not natural, you know, at least on this planet. And so if we could honor death, if we could let a product line or a business or whatever die, what would be fertilized underneath that? You know, what mm-hmm. is, if we really were willing to rest in the fertile void and trust that new life wants to be born, like what would want to come through after that? And it's been a deep inquiry of mine. And I would say this was also spurned by psychedelic explorations as well, of course. And, you know, those mysteries and those experiences and really being able to travel to the underworld and the heavens and feel like, oh, there's just so much more. And what if we incorporated more of that into this life? And yeah, that even makes me think of like the Eleusinian mysteries, you know, back in ancient Greece, when these secret rites of initiation, you know, mysterious rituals were performed, but it's said that people left feeling no fear of death on the other side of these experiences. And I just wonder, if we were to honor death a bit more, get a bit closer to it, would life look a bit brighter on the other side?
That brings up so many strands. You've just given me a tapestry and I don't know which piece of string to pull. So I have a couple of very close friends who are medicine guides and do a lot of end of life work with psilocybin mostly. Mm-hmm. And the profound power that can have over people being more accepting with that, like letting death sit a little bit closer on the bench. And speaking from my own experience, the experience of having felt ego death.
Yeah.
and know that I am completely dissolved into the universe. And yeah. I've had an experience of having had a choice. I was like, okay, I am reduced to my individual atoms. Do I want to scoop myself back up together again and rejoin my body? Or is this it? I feel like I'm complete. Like, I don't have to scoop myself up. Are there things left for me to do? And I sat with that in that, you know, completely disintegrated state for a moment and had this moment of like, yeah, I would be completely happy for this to be the end of my journey. And I think there is more for me to do. And so I made a conscious choice of reassembling myself. And my life has been significantly different from that point onward.
Yeah.
Such powerful experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, in the West, in our culture, we're so missing these deeper mystical or meaningful experiences, you know, at the downfall of religion here, where I think we're in many ways left grappling with like, well, what is there? Is there anything beyond this life? We don't have that belief structure that our society had hundreds of years ago that was way more certain in their being of what happened after death. And I think in lieu of that, that's one of many reasons why I believe psychedelics are having this resurgence right now of, you know, being something that gives people a more direct experience of what's...
I'm a member of one church that is a church of least dogma, and their only rule is that you have to be open to the possibility of, through using these sacraments, you have the possibility of having a direct experience with the divine. That is so delightfully vague, because that could be true for almost everybody. And I'm like, yes, religion is very different. Spiritual experience is very different from person to person. And leaving the door open to that being okay.
Yeah.
Like, most of my experiences with religion have been as a form of control at some level through, you know, patriarchy or capitalist approaches, or being like the only way of communicating with the gods or with God. And that never sat well with me.
Yeah. I think when we zoom way out, you know, the reality sets in that as small humans, nobody really knows what we're doing here. You know, we don't have it figured out. And so, yeah, to give grace to those that choose to dive headfirst into finding meaning, and to give grace to those that dive headfirst into escaping to avoid, it's a harrowing journey either way we're on.
So imagine somebody's listening to this and they're like, okay, fine, I'm convinced, I need to do some thinking about death. Where do you start? What is there a prompt? Is there a, like, how, where do you even begin?
That's a great question. I think it's always been present in everybody's lives. We've just missed it. And so a good prompt might be something like, where is death already present in your life now? Or where did you get to come close or closer with death? And did you fully embrace that experience? And that doesn't have to be your own direct experience, right? It doesn't have to be an ego death in a psychedelic expanded state. It can be like the death of a loved one, or a pet passing away, or I see this all the time in everybody hating the changing of the season to fall and winter. You know, nobody wants to let go of summer because it's the bright and the shining, and it feels more fun and light and easy, and winter can feel really hard and dark and scary and mysterious. And so even just in that, like, I've been watching myself this fall be more ready for winter. And that's been a cool interpretation or exploration of that for me, that feels like a lighter way to play with it.
If there's a gardener out there, you know, they're intimately familiar with the cycles. And even in California, which is a pitiful excuse for seasons, I grew up in Norway where it's like full on winter, full on summer and everything. Yeah. Saying goodbye to your garden.
Yeah.
Thank you, strawberries. See you next year.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know, it's such a, that hadn't occurred to me, but that is a very good of accepting or trying on for size, the idea or the concept of death in the sense of the tarot card.
Yeah.
Then it's the
yeah.
beginning of a new cycle rather
Right.
than, okay, this is the end and from here onwards.
Yeah.
I love the bit in Zen Buddhism where the emperor comes to a Zen master and asks, what is it like to be dead? And the Zen master says, I do not know.
Mm-hmm.
And the emperor says, why do you not know? He says, well, I'm not a dead Zen master. And I love that. There's like this playfulness with, and then particularly in the context of religion, I suppose, which is supposed to have all the answers.
Yeah, yeah.
But that there's this honesty about it. Like, I don't know. In this brand new world where we strive for so much control, whether being comfortable with uncertainty is something that we're kind of trained out of constantly, right? So surprise and uncertainty is more and more rare in my life these days.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of my life, there will be a big surprise or a big uncertainty. Like we've kind of forgotten how to condition ourselves for even conceiving of that.
Totally. Totally. I mean, I see that in the business world all the time. Like everything, you know, I used to be an equities analyst at a hedge fund many years ago. And back then we would watch these companies like basically modulate their earnings reports to try and flatten everything out. Whether we like it or not, everything is alive. You know, even business is alive.
Yeah.
And we're trying to control or mitigate or just simplify things in a way. It's like, what if we just let it be a little bit more wild and alive? And I, in many ways, think that it's us and our nervous systems and our capacity to hold uncertainty and change and the unknown, like that's where the work is to me, is how do we change ourselves to allow for things to be wild and alive? And we'd probably have a better time. I don't think it would be easy from the start, but I think ultimately we'd have a more fulfilling experience in it. And part of that, back to something you were saying earlier, Haya, with like saying goodbye to the strawberry plants. You know, there's also this concept that a group of friends and myself talk about often of like giving something a good death. How can we give whatever, whether it's like that quarterly earnings report that just things just didn't go well? Like, can we actually just acknowledge that and give it a good death and let things really play out, or the strawberry plant, or, you know, life in general? Like, how do we really give things a good death?
Feels to me like you're describing a life where you have a practice of whether that's spirituality or I don't know how you put words around that, that incorporates death as a natural part of the cycle. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it does. I think it's a lot of my personal inquiry and practices lately has been to really around to try and come into deeper wholeness. And so, you know, if we go back to what I was saying earlier about death often being like the feminine and the masculine being life, how do we honor both? You know, how do I be more fully human? How do I let myself sit with death and sit with life? You know, how do I work with all sides of this to really feel like I'm getting the fullest human experience I can have?
Yeah. So do you think it's healthy to think of death as evolution and change, as a state change?
I do, but I'm curious what you think.
Oh, I absolutely do.
Yeah.
I had a extremely strongly lived experience of recognizing that there was only one soul. And that this one soul is condemned to live all the lives of all the creatures all at once, but sequentially.
Mm-hmm.
So you and me are the same one soul.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you are 50,000 cycles ahead of me or behind me, but to me, even just as a thought experiment, nobody has to agree with me, but to me that really woke up my empathy.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, no matter who you are, what you do, I have something I can learn from you and you have something you can learn from me. Let's figure it out together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I found such softness in my interaction with other people when I allowed myself to believe that we were the same. And from that perspective, of course, death isn't, it isn't even reincarnation. It's just a continuation in the next body, in the next creature, in the next what have you. And that was such a profoundly strongly felt sense for me that I was like, that's now my reality. And I, you know, I don't think I'm ready to start a cult and build a religion around it, but it makes sense to me. And I'm like, that's all it needs to, right? That can be my truth.
Yeah, being in relationship with death has definitely softened me in life. You know, it, and I've seen that even in an uncle that passed away within the last 2 years, and he had kind of a long, slow, painful exit. He was such a strong figure in life and like such a powerhouse and a lion and like just such a proud man. And to see him soften over the years and as he moved closer and closer to his death, it was like I could get closer to him. And it was really tender and beautiful. And, you know, I think there was this gentle element of like, we are the same, you know, and there's something really profound and like life altering in that sense of connection.
And so if somebody's listening to this and they're kind of like semi connecting with this material, they're like, mm-hmm. okay, on an intellectual level, this makes sense, mm-hmm. but I've never felt this. Mm-hmm. Can you remember the first time you felt a level of connection with death or how that came up for you?
I think for me, oh gosh, this was a very long time ago. I was pretty young. Well, I guess a bit of background here is that I grew up Catholic, I'm Italian Catholic raised. And so all of the wakes and funerals that I've been to were usually like open casket. The body is embalmed, you know, and so as a young girl going to these services and seeing these bodies, just knowing like, whoa, the sense of impermanence, I think became very real for me very quickly in that. And like the grief and the loss, I think was the painful, what do I want to call it? Almost like the painful treasure that like actually the grief and the loss of this person that I loved in my life is what cracked me open to that felt sense of this, and allowing those feelings to move through me and allowing grief to be a teacher and a friend in this, not just as like a thing to get through, but as something that's like bringing me more into my human body, more into this human experience, mm-hmm. just like letting me be more embodied in that. In that moment was the sense of impermanence and the felt sense of grief and the seeing the dead bodies in front of me was, yeah, all those things were the pieces of the puzzle that kind of drove home for me and made it really real.
I have an experience that mirrors that pretty closely, but was a very opposite experience.
Oh, I'd love to hear.
Again, a Catholic family, my granddad had died. And in Holland, they don't use embalming fluid, mm-hmm. but they still do caskets, right? Mm-hmm. And so there was a window in the casket. The casket was essentially a fridge, as far as I could tell, but a pretty fridge with, you know, a window on it. But looking into that casket and seeing my granddad, like humans don't stay fresh very long.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
And it was kind of a harrowing experience.
Yeah.
I recognized him, but he was like,
yeah,
pale and just didn't, like, very unlifelike.
Yeah.
And I don't know how old I was.
Mm.
But my poor neurodivergent mind completely exploded. I was like, that's going to be me?
Mm.
And I think the one blessing in this is that he died 90-something years old. So I was kind of abstracted away from it. He was an old man. I was a young kid. Yeah. So there was a difference between us.
Yeah.
It took many years, many, many years later to realize, oh, wait, no, I'm also going to die at some point. Like, I completely failed to make that connection.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to use the word trauma because that would be slightly over-exaggerated, but it was definitely a formative moment where I was like, whoa, what the hell is going on here? Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And all the grown-ups super sad and, you know, everyone, it's like a really weird, really weird vibe in that room.
Yeah. You kind of never forget when that becomes real.
Right.
I had a really unfortunate and intense experience as a pretty young girl. I think I was in elementary or middle school, and it was a really tragic story, but a dear friend of mine died in a fire, her and her family and her siblings and her father and pretty much everybody but her mother passed away. And to go to that funeral with all of those tiny caskets, it made it real for me as a young kid that, like, oh, this can happen anytime. You know, it's not just for old people. And I think as painful and traumatic as that was, it was an initiation into, like, oh, I'm a human and life is very temporary here. And how precious is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You mentioned a phrase, a good death, which mm-hmm. I feel very yummy about. In Scandinavia, they have a concept of death cleaning, which is, you know, you make it in your into your autumnal years, and you start thinking about, okay, what do I need to sell, get rid of, sort out, prepare for inheritance? Like, what conversations do I still need to have? Which forgivenesses do I need? Mm-hmm. And it's actually a culturally pretty well-known process.
Wow.
I don't think I've experienced that here. Is that a thing?
No, I've never. I mean, that's very new to me in the U.S., but I wish we had that. Can you help us?
Right. Well, and so that's what I'm thinking. It's like, if that is something, like, to our listeners, if that's something that sounds, oh, actually, that makes a lot of sense to me, or maybe that's a way that I can, I mean, my experience with end of life was particularly focused on end of life care planning. I did a startup at some point that was helping people have their first conversations about death.
Yeah.
So doing, you know, health proxies and final wishes and like under which circumstances do people want or not want to be resuscitated, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Like, I have seen the opposite of good deaths often.
Yeah.
You know, when somebody ends up on a ventilator and nobody knows what their wishes were, and they end up just being kept alive for some value of alive for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it is distressing to me that I have a much clearer picture of a not good death than of a good death, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like, I'm curious how we ended up here.
I mean, I think it goes back to that fear of death and wanting to push it away and wanting to control life. It's it's something we just are not comfortable looking at in the U.S.
And I actually see a little sliver of hope here, which is that many of the people listening to this podcast have done high workshops. You know, we're a bunch of wonderful, sex-positive, love-positive, life-positive human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there is a possibility here for finding people in your communities who are open to new ideas and open to new thoughts and directions, that maybe this could be one of them. It's a hard conversation, but it's yet another conversation in a long list of hard conversations.
Yeah.
So, I'm curious if there's something there.
Yeah, you know, I think it gets easier over time. I think it's like any, like, building a muscle. It's always pretty uncomfortable at first, right? And, like, a little bit painful. And but the more reps you get in, the easier it gets to just be familiar with it and then maybe comfortable and then embracing. And, you know, I think we can start small as a culture. And maybe it's, like you said earlier, Haya, you give your garden a good death at the end of the season, you know, or the flowers that you got that week, and how do you give them back to the earth? You know, we throw stuff in the garbage so easily, but can we just say thank you or put them back on the earth? Or how do we honor that?
Yeah. Do you have an invitation to people listening?
I do, actually. I didn't think I did, but I do. We're at, we're nearing the end of autumn. We're heading into winter, and it's just a beautiful time to explore what the good is in death. And, you know, death, I think in this case, can be synonymous with rest, the dark, the fertile void, the mystery, you know, but, like, how do we embrace this in a way where we can see the benefits of it, or the highlights, or the gifts in it, really? And this might be one of the first seasons, and fall and winter have always been my favorite seasons. I think that was something growing up in the Northeast. that I just was very drawn to. But even still, this might be the first season where I'm really embracing the dark each night. And so even, you know, in the Northern Hemisphere, we're in a darker time of the year right now. And can we embrace and enjoy that more? Maybe we don't keep the lights on until 11 o'clock at night. Maybe light a candle or just start to wind down a little bit earlier, or just invite ourselves into what does it look like to being a bit more harmonious with these seasons right now. And in that, I think we're even honoring death and honoring rest and honoring that cycle. Yeah.
Beautiful.
That would be my invitation.
I love that. At some point I did a silly thing, which was asking Siri to announce to me sunset every day.
Oh.
And, you know, throughout the day, it was like day after day after day, yeah. You know, I had never internalized how much that sunset and sunrise shifts in time.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there doing something that's completely routine and suddenly, wait, it's sunset. And I made myself the promise of every sunset, I would go and look at the sunset. Perfect. And so, yeah, that's a... I love that invitation. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, there's this, that reminds me, there's this amazing ritual on Fire Island off Long Island every summer where a lot of the like longer term families that have homes there and stuff, they know this ritual where every day around 6 o'clock, I think it's called six-ish. This is the name of the ritual, six-ish. And they bring their ice cream cones or their cocktail or whatever outside, and they go to the dock, to the pier, to the beach, and they applaud the sunset. And there's just something so epically delicious about that to me, of like, that's giving a good death to the day, you know, that daylight, like just really honoring the change and moving with the transition. And so you're not missing the sunset is reminding me of that sweet ritual that they have out there.
I also remember at Burning Man, people howling at the sunset, and that becomes like, let your animal self in.
Yeah.
And then, you know, do whatever people do at Burning Man after sunset. But it's, I thought it was a beautiful way of allowing yourself to mark something. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if we can get into the habit of thinking of sunsets as the death of a day, you know, death lives close to you every day at that point, right?
Totally.
It's really
totally.
Easy. I don't know if it's easy, but it's you're not going to forget sunset. At some point, it's dark. I love that.
And then, you know, and then the question becomes to me, this is like the dark feminine now. Who are you in the night? Who is the other side of you? What are you like, you know, once the sun goes down and you howl at it going down and the moon comes up? Who are you then? What other aspects of your being are you not exploring that are like waiting to be played with?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. I think that's a glorious place to end this. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Haya.
Thank you so much for joining us for our episode today. If you like the topics of the High podcast, check out our workshops. We do them online and in person. Learn more on high.org. That is HAI.org. See you soon.